time is 5:59, right on the dot. Coming up next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel in Portland. The Business of Diversity will be a conversation about the impact of diversity on the economy and business in Oregon. This panel discussion features business owners, educators, and community leaders. Again, that's the Business of Diversity on August 7th at 11 a.m. at the Sentinel Hotel, 614 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Books and Records! Books and Records! Come on down to KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th, noon to 6 p.m. at Cider Riot. There will be fabulous books, DVDs, CDs, and vinyl at ridiculously low prices. It's a fun community event that benefits your favorite community radio station, KBOO. Again, that's KBOO's annual used book and record sale on Saturday, August 19th from noon to 6 at Cider Riot, 807 Northeast Cooch Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country.
Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We want our bread and roses, too. Get it? I'm your host tonight, Poochie, and our engineer is Jenna Yukiyama.
And I am Pamela Santos, co-host and executive producer, and we have in the studio today, we have Lillian, I'm going to mess it up.
I'll just say it. My last name is Ongalung.
I knew it, and I'm so sorry.
We'll get to it.
We're going to teach everyone to say your name.
Yes.
It's going to be good. And also, we have on the line Manumalo Ala Ilima. Yes. Not the yes part. Hey, Malo.
Hi, Pam. Hi, Moochie.
I was so close.
Moochie?
Yes.
Okay. And Lillian.
I'm sorry. This whole name thing just reminded me of that Rafe Fiennes debacle we had here.
I did a dry run before, and I didn't do the dry run with Lillian. That's radio, everybody.
We're going live.
That's everybody. So what we have today, we're going to be talking, first off, in the first part of the show, we're going to be talking about Utopia PDX, and that's why we have Malo on the line. And Lillian is going to continue the conversation with us through the hour.
Excellent.
So first off, let's just get right to it. Malo, can you tell us a little bit about Utopia PDX, as in tell us anything about?
Sure, Pam. Utopia PDX, the acronym stands for United Territories of Pacific Islanders Alliance, Portland, and we do have members in Vancouver, so it's both communities. And what we focus on is LGBTQ issues in the Pacific Islander community in Portland and in Vancouver. So we're a chapter of Utopia. Utopia originated in San Francisco in 1998, and it was started by Polynesians that lived in the Bay Area as a social group, and then it turned into social justice, overall education and wellness within Pacific Islander communities. So I was really glad to have that framework when I lived in the Bay Area, because I was involved in Utopia San Francisco. And then when I moved here to, or there, because I'm calling from LA, to Portland 3 years ago, I was searching for any type of Pacific Islander organization that dealt with those who identified as LGBTQ plus, and I didn't find anything that closely matched, but I did get involved with API Pride for about a year, and API Pride is Asian and Pacific Islander Pride, and it didn't quite satisfy what I felt was needed for the Pacific Islander LGBTQ plus community there in Portland and Vancouver. Thus, we formed in March, and we've been hosting different events steadily up until now.
And what do you, if you could talk a little bit more about what you were looking for that you didn't find, but that you could find with Utopia?
Well, I was able to connect with people that I knew were Samoan and also identified as gay or fa-fa-finge, in the manner of a woman, or other fa-fa-tama or fa-tama in the manner of a male if you're female, masculine, of center presenting. But we would just hang out and not really have a mission in trying to organize for different social justice issues that might arise because we come from this marginalized community. I think when we speak of Asian and Pacific Islanders, the PI portion, the Pacific Islander portion, tends to get overlooked. And so we don't necessarily get the data collection and the distribution of resources appropriately because we're often coupled into that grouping and are not taken as seriously because we don't have the visibility or the advocacy in order for that to become a reality for us. And I think when I started meeting folks in the first couple of years when I was living in Portland, I basically got all of my acquaintances and friends, and we formed earlier this year. I believe I met more people at the Pacific Islander Coalition, which is an advisory board to the Multnomah County Health Department, and there happened to be Pacific Islander LGBTQ PIA that were there, and they reached out to me because they knew that I was affiliated with API Pride back then and wanted to start a group for Pacific Islander LGBTQ PIA plus.
So Lillian, you were around for that start of earlier this year organizing, yeah?
Yeah. It happened really serendipitously, and I was really excited because my background in organizing has always been with a heavy focus on Pacific Islander students and access to education and health equity. So it seemed really fitting that not only through the Pacific Islander Student Alliance organization that I had a hand in helping out with, but also through the very small Pacific Islander community in Portland, we all somehow overlapped, whether it was through our work in higher ed or our work with the PI coalition that Malo mentioned, or through other things, say, with API Pride or volunteering through APANO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. It just made sense that we all kind of coalesced as a group and really started something that really helped, I think, take on new life. We've done so much as a newly formed group with Utopia that has been really, really exciting in terms of building momentum and really kind of steering us in a direction that's a lot more visionary than I even anticipated.
You listen to that, Malo?
Yeah, and just to piggyback off of Lillian, our intersectionality, which brings us to an organization like APANO and or the Q Center, has been incredibly fruitful for our organization because they provided the space and visibility and support that we needed to host activities that were meaningful for Pacific Islander LGBTQ PIA youth, and or right now we're kind of at a point where we're seeing intergenerational interaction and trying to find the space that makes most sense for cultivating that. But we're very grateful for the Q Center and APANO for providing those resources for us.
And is it too early to talk about what you receive from the Q Center?
No, it's not. So I just found out earlier today that Utopia PDX will be an honoree at the Q Center Shine Gala, which is Sunday, October 8th, 2017, at the Portland Marriott Waterfront. So for those who would like to support the Q Center and all the great, wonderful programs and services, please, please, please buy your tickets now. And we're actually going to be honoree for a Constellation Award for the work that Utopia PDX has been doing since March.
I'm still hearing that, just since March.
Baby.
Yeah, I'll give you an example. So May is Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, and we were approached by GLAPIN, the Gay and Lesbian Archives of the Pacific Northwest, because they had an idea of honoring Asian and Pacific Islanders who have been pivotal in the Pacific Northwest, and then also have a display of those profiles or bios of these people who have been giving back to the LGBTQ PIA community. And so that was at the end of April. And at the beginning of May, Utopia PDX got together a cultural display. Many of them were personal items from our board members. And we had a display of Pacific Islander cultural items, as well as a storybook display of API Pride that they usually use during tabling. And GLAPIN was able to have profiles of Asian and Pacific Islander honorees from the past posted against one of our Samoan fine mats for display. So we have that up for about a month at the Q Center, and then also hosted a Asian and Pacific Islander LGBTQ PIA Plus panel and a reception, and it was widely it was received really well, and that's just something that we did at the last minute.
Could I even just ask about your process when you're meeting as a group and planning events, and how you're going to, set up activities? I know you said earlier that you originally started without having a mission necessarily, or like, here's the agenda for today's meeting kind of thing when you get together. But it seems like you've already just done these kind of like big and small activities. What's the process like? Do you balance it out?
Well, we definitely try to balance it out. Everyone, this is a volunteer-led organization. We have about 14 people on our board. This is a working board because we just started. So everyone pitches in however we can. We actually used the guidelines that a sister chapter of Utopia in Seattle has in terms of their bylaws and their articles of incorporation to kind of help guide us on what we needed to document for our group. We've had several board meetings held at my place of employment and as well as across the river in Vancouver at Te Kukui Foundation, which is a nationally known Native Hawaiian organization in Vancouver. And so we do a lot of communication through our board meetings as well as via email.
But it's pretty much, just collaborative, best ideas forward, let's run with it.
Yeah, pretty much. I would say, just to chime in here a little bit, I would say that our Utopia board functions really in the true spirit of the collectivist societies and cultures that we come from. A lot of the work is really evenly spread out. And of course, we always love to meet and gather around food. And so I'm definitely going to plug that and say we've been really, really happy to have, just literally sit down, break bread with each other and get to work.
I'm going to bring up something because there I was honored to be invited as a guest to a Utopia PDX karaoke get-together. Mala, when was that?
I think that was at the beginning of May.
Yeah, that was during the week of the Apano Gala.
So...
That's correct.
So I can give my observation, just being a guest and coming in. We're all in this big karaoke room. And I think, I was Filipino late. So I was just like regular late for everybody. Y'all remember that. And as I came in, it was just like, okay, everyone talked. And then now Pamela can just say a little bit about themselves. So before even singing and really, cutting it up and having fun, I liked that people had gone around and talked about where they came from, talked about if it felt right to talk about the cultures that they came from or were raised in. So there could be a difference. That's what I also listened to, is that there was a difference of there could be a culture that they come from, a background, but they were raised in a different culture too. So that was possible. I was listening. And kind of how people, I feel like it just came out very organically also without having to go around just talking about queer identity in the room also.
Thank you for blessing us with your presence.
Oh, gosh.
it's the sort of vibe that happens usually at our board meetings as well. We try to build consensus in determining a particular decision on certain issues. And I think what was important was to kind of, you know, set the tone. You know, we want to enjoy ourselves, but we also know that the reason why Gregory Sandana was there as the former ED for the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance was to be a keynote speaker at the Pano Gala, and he happened to be Filipino, who was born in Guam and also was an openly gay male. And, you know, I thought to live in those intersections and to give an opportunity to a group like Utopia PDX to co-sponsor with Apano, give us that space to interact with someone like him was really important, especially for those who couldn't attend the gala because it might have been a bit expensive for them, but just to have access. So that's something that I think I try to always remember, that, you know, accessibility, visibility, advocacy is always on my mind in terms of interacting with other groups. And I'm glad that you were able to kind of feel a welcoming vibe from us, and that that's something that, you know, I feel that is to everyone's benefit when you have a genuine interaction like that.
No, I definitely understand. And I was really intentional in saying that I was a guest, in saying that, like, the way that I identify with being Filipino is the Philippines being a part of Southeast Asia. There's a lot of similarities, I find, like, the more that I talk to you and Lillian about maybe cultural things, and we'll get to, you know, all of the food later too. always talking about purple yam ube with Malo here. Right?
My favorite.
Yeah. So there's, I think it's beautiful for us to find the ways that we have connections, but I still have a very high respect for respecting our differences and respecting, you know, what is true to different people's cultural identities. And for me, I don't feel that the same history and just other things, I still feel like there is no way for me as a Filipino to right now be a part of or co-opt Pacific Islander identity unless I was really engaging. And so that's what I wanted to make the distinction of why I was there at Utopia. In some ways, I just feel like even just talking about it, I feel like these are the kind of conversations that people have kind of like in our homes, like in kind of like one-on-one meetings, but, you know, like at large, people are not talking about trying to walk the fine line of having groups that are specific to a specific identity, and that it's okay to say, no, this is for us, and not in a way that is exclusionary, but that actually respects it. No, this is for us.
Yes, no, absolutely. I think even having like Pacific Islander as a label, or Oceania dysphoria, it's not the best type of grouping because there's diverse groups within that. And as I mentioned earlier, there's Micronesians, Melanesians, and Polynesians, and how do we honor everyone in terms of colonialism, militarization, and impacted by missionaries for Christianity, and how that's impacted each of our Pacific Islander groups. There's a lot to be said about that, and it's in dealing with all that on top of being a sexual minority, identifying as a lesbian, as a gay man, or bisexual, or trans gender man or woman. Queer, pansexual, intersex, asexual. You know, at what point do we know how we existed in those spaces prior to colonialism. So we're also discovering that. And Lillian actually prepared a wonderful workshop for queer, trans, questioning Pacific Islander youth that we did in conjunction with APANO and the Q Center. And from that grouping, the majority of the youth identified as Two-Spirit and queer. And, you know, we wouldn't have been able to identify that, you know, had we continued with the type of programming that seems to be cis heteronormative and not really delve into, you know, how our youth are actually seeing themselves. So Lillian could probably discuss further because she really did some wonderful research around the topic and gathering information for that wonderful workshop.
Yeah, okay. I'll just be clear here. I love words and I love learning. So naturally, I've got a bit of a knack for research. But really, when I went into building this workshop for the youth, and keep in mind that it was the youth that essentially approached Utopia seeking some kind of information, some kind of, you know, knowledge from us more elder, I guess, people. Yeah, really what I wanted to pull into the workshop is, you know, thinking back to when I was, you know, a 13-year-old trying to navigate my life and with my lived experience only being, you know, this 13-year gap, you know, or 13-year span, what knowledge or what kind of resources did I want at that age that would help me kind of, you know, just be on a good track? And essentially, I just kind of asked, you know, friends here and there who are, you know, Pacific Islanders who do identify as queer, you know, what kind of things did you want to know back then? Or how did you want to approach these types of topics with people who could mentor you? And pretty much across the board, I had a lot of people essentially say that they wanted some kind of vocabulary to talk about this stuff, that they weren't learning it in school, they weren't learning it from home, they had some weird kind of vague, cloudy notion of what they were feeling and experiencing, but again, they just didn't have a solid sense of how to discuss this with other people. So with that, I really wanted to emphasize the notion of self-determination and self-identifying as you feel comfortable, because even in the different categories of Pacific Islander, that the groupings that Malo had mentioned, you know, the terms Micronesian, Melanesian, Polynesian, those were terms that were thrust upon us by colonizers. You know, those aren't words that we created for ourselves. Those aren't words that Pacific Islanders, you know, pre-European contact ever used to refer to each other. So, you know, just by kind of pointing out the types of words that that Pacific Islanders, kind of in this queer Pacific Islander Renaissance state that I feel is really evolving across the world, you know, I wanted to highlight some of those terms. And Malo had mentioned a few in Samoan that I thought were really important to highlight, that, you know, as and again, Malo, chime in. I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but you know, when you were describing the difference between Fatama, like, you don't feel like you're a boy, you know, you're grown. So, you know, by really emphasizing that you have ownership over how you identify yourself, I think that's a really powerful and strong thing that that at least for me, I needed to hear as a youth, and I didn't quite understand until later in my life. So I feel it's really important to equip people with the right tools in their little kits to be able to speak their truths a little bit more clearly.
That's absolutely right. So just to address what Lillian was referring to, as I mentioned, Fafafinga is in the manner of a woman for our trans women in Samoan. For someone like me who is female and is masculine of center presenting, they have Fa Tama, Fa Tama, And what I was telling Lillian is, like, I really feel like a Fatima Loa because I'm not a boy. I'm a grown person. So there's, you know, there's a talk about how terms should be used and how can they be used to self-determine ourselves. And that's something that Utopia PDX is also working on developing, because even in the Palawan language, there's no set terminology.
Yeah, I'm still searching for the word. I'm still trying to invent my own Palawan term for pansexual. So if there's any Palawans out there listening, let's get together and start brainstorming, right?
And I'm glad that you even brought up the importance of vocabulary. Like, there are certain things culturally that I know, like in Philippine culture, but Puchi, what kind of, that's harder to translate kind of words with queer identity or like gender identity do you know of?
For Spanish?
Or for you, like specifically Puerto Rican, or if there's anything.
Yeah, I feel like the one thing a lot of us, just like in Spanish and in Puerto Rico, are having like some, I don't know how to say, so like some difficulties with is mostly just like identifying as like they, them, and being in that like non-binary position.
Okay.
Because the Spanish language is so gendered, like even the way you say tape, like the table in Spanish is like gendered. So we've been having to like edit the grammar and the way we speak, and you know, so it's like every time I speak to somebody from Puerto Rico who's like coming from the islands, I'll always ask them like, going on down there, like in the non-binary world, like how are people finding ways to talk, you know? Because even plural is gendered.
Yeah,
so it's not like you can't just speak in plural like in other languages, I guess. So yeah, that's probably the one I find most challenging, probably.
Yeah, that actually totally like launched my mind into this like spiral just now, thinking like, wow, how do you ungender a very gendered language? And, you know, words matter all the time.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a little hard. And then you have like grammar, you know, like grammar strict people who get annoyed when you start switching letters.
Right. Oh my gosh, I'm going to go home and have to research my, you know, gender neutral pronouns in Spanish. I'm glad you mentioned that.
I mean, a lot of what, you know, and I definitely want to wrap up with Malo with this too, is just, it seems if you don't have the word for it, you're going to make it, mm-hmm. right? And if you don't have the group that you fit in, you're gonna make it, right?
That's mm-hmm. right,
exactly.
That's absolutely right.
Malo, do you have any just like parting words before we say farewell, just here and before we launch into what I hope we can do almost regularly at Bread and Roses is a karaoke section. Before we do that, you have any parting words?
Yeah, absolutely. If there are any Pacific Islander folks who identify as LGBTQPIA+, you can send us an email at utopiapdx2017, all of them together, @gmail.com. And we would love to get in touch with you and let you know about future events that we're doing.
Yes, please do. I highly encourage it. I would just love to have more people at karaoke singing with me, because I really, really, really want to do a good duet of Monica and Brandy, Boy Is Mine, or Girl Is Mine, whatever. I mean,
I'm Monica.
Okay. Okay. I got you next time. We'll reenact the whole entire music video.
Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. It'll be lovely.
Yeah, because if we were not only radio, but actually a video show right now, y'all are going to be missing out on. I was able to see Lillian provide choreography to this.
Wait, there was choreography?
You totally had choreography.
Oh my gosh. I might have seen the movie a few too many times.
So, I think Molly's going to start to listen, too. So, here we are. We're getting ready to do, I think it's a first. Instead of a musical break, we're going to have live singing over a karaoke track. It is Selena's classic.
Bitty, bitty, bum, bum.
Anything for Selena.
Anything for Selena's.
Gonna come on.
Please feel free to join me.
Oh my God. Whoa, yeah, now. But repeat it, your mom. Hey, 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 yeah, now. Bitty, bitty, bum, bum. Bitty, bitty, bum, bum. Bitty, bitty, bum, bum. Bitty, bitty, bitty. Cada vez.
Come on, Pan, join.
Cada vez que lo veo pasar. Mi corazón se enloquece y me empieza a palpitar.
Come on, Poochie, sing with Becca.
Oh my
God. Y se emociona, ya no razona, no lo puedo controlar. Y se emociona, ya no razona, y me empieza a cantar, cantar, me canta así, así, así. Biri biri bam bam,
biri biri bam bam,
biri biri bam bam,
biri biri bam bam,
biri 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 bam bam, biri 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 biri. Cada vez, cada vez que lo oiga hablar. Me tiemblan hasta las piernas.
Las piernas.
Y el corazón igual. Y se emociona.
Se emociona.
Ya no razona, no lo puedo controlar. Y se emociona.
Se emociona.
Ya no razona. Y me empieza a cantar.
Cantar.
Me canta así, así, así. Biri biri bam bam. Biri biri bam bam. Biri 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 bam bam. Biri 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 biri. Hey, yeah. Barripe de jamam. Hey, hey, hey.
Slim left. And this is the part where you cumbia. There's like a little cumbia solo.
Yeah.
Or the washing machine. it's in the movie. She does the washing machine.
Yeah, she does like a little washing machine.
She does
machine.
The little hip thing.
Oh, come How's on. That a washing machine?
You need to go back and watch some more Selena, okay?
Cuando escucha esta canción, mi corazón quiere cantar así. Me canta así, cada vez que lo veo pasar, wow, wow, wow. Y me empieza a palpitar.
Okay, we're done. Yay! So yeah, yes. Somebody please come to our Utopia events and come to karaoke, because I will do that and sing it just for you.
Upon request.
Yes,
just like.
I take requests. I mean, Pam, if that was a hit with the fans, you know, I'll be back. I'll bring my uke.
It's definitely something that I think we've been needing. This has been, I feel like, the longest summer. Do you feel like it's, I don't know, it just feels like an oppressive summer, and so I wanted to provide a little lightness today. And absolutely, with all of it, it was Oh my God. I mean, as usual, because we're radio, you can't see how delighted I was watching the both of you. If you're tuning in just now, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. So I'm your host, Pamela Santos, and we have our host, Pucci.
Hey.
And our amazing guest, Lillian Ongonglal.
I did so it close. We get, we'll get there. We will get there.
And we brought up Selena because it was also my other way to be able to talk about other things. Not only as a nice little karaoke break, but also, hey there, very fluent in Spanish speaker.
Wait, what? Who?
You.
Me?
Oh, yes.
Well, I guess.
Okay. So the thing that I, you know, wanted to have you come on and secretly be able to talk about is for you to talk about yourself.
Oh, mm-hmm. Me.
Yeah. So how did you tell me a little bit about...
Ask me a question.
Well, like, when did you learn Spanish?
Oh my gosh. So here's the thing. I'm the only person in my family that speaks Spanish. And the reason why, I'm not exactly clear on how this was an idea of theirs. So English was my second language. My first language growing up, I spoke Palawan. And when I was, I want to say maybe kindergarten or first grade, Portland Public Schools launched their first ever immersion program, and it was in Spanish. And I believe it was called Project SABE. SABE was an acronym. I don't remember what it stood for, but it's some kind of Spanish something, something.
Does anyway. It stand for something?
It's an acronym, but I have no idea what it stands for. Anyway, if
so
you're...
SABE is like a way to say something in Tagalog. It's like to say, like to talk about something. S-A-B-I, like essentially.
Yeah. Oh, SABE.
It was weird.
It comes from SABER, like,
yeah,
like to know.
SABE is to know.
Yeah.
So usually when you say SABE, is to say that this person knows something.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, so I was part of Project SABE when it first started in Portland. So if any of you Portland public school teachers are listening and want to school us a little bit about what it stands for, let me know.
And where did you go for your immersion program?
Well, no, I'm not there yet.
Oh,
that's later on in my life. So I'm sorry. We'll get to that part. It's the most important part. Trust
the
me.
Best part.
Yeah, it is. So I started taking Spanish immersion when I was, I don't know, maybe 6-7 years old, kind of around the time that I started speaking English frequently, I guess. But yeah, so I started learning Spanish. I was taking half my day in English for like reading and writing, but then I would take math, science, art, and all these other random classes in Spanish. So it was half English, half Spanish. And then I transferred to a private school after going to Beach Elementary until third grade. Go Bobcats, by the way. And then yeah, I kind of just stagnated a little bit in my Spanish when I was at this private school because nobody else had been in an immersion program for Spanish, so it wasn't really challenging until maybe high school. But this is the best part, Pucci's favorite part. So in high school, I ended up studying abroad, first in Spain for a summer, a month, and then I went to Puerto Rico.
¡Huepa!
I was waiting for that. I knew that was coming. But here's,
nobody else knew that was coming, including me.
Here's the best part about... So I was staying in San Juan with the homestay family, and it was marvelous because there were so many things about Puerto Rico that I learned that I didn't realize were so close to home and made me feel so much as if I was within my, you know, like, oh, I found my people. They're just on another island in a different ocean.
It was the same.
Yeah, no, it was exactly the same. So I felt really connected to that island culture, that Caribbean culture. You know, I was going through some place. I don't know if it was like somewhere in Old San Juan or like maybe it was airport. I don't know. I was walking through, probably. I was walking through somewhere and I picked up some candies thinking like, oh, I'm going to take some like, you know, authentic Puerto Rican candies home and it's going to be something new that my family's never tried.
And it's coconut candy and pineapple candy.
Oh my God, yes. It was coconut candy. I bit into it and I was like, why does this taste like my childhood? I'm not from here.
It's like coconut cream.
Yeah, and then I had mentioned it earlier, like the coconut limbe, like, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, that was a flavor of my childhood where my dad, I remember making, you know, the same thing every summer. So it was just like, whoa, maybe this could be home for me one day. I don't know.
It was, and the great thing is that you don't stand, like, you don't, you fit in.
I blend in so much. Like, that's the part that I love, is that I can go anywhere, travel, just blend in really easily. Like, even in Spain, like, when I was in Spain, so I went with, like, essentially a school group of Americans, whatever. And the whole time I was there, we were in the southern part of Spain, and that's really close to Northern Africa. So as we were in our homestay town, with these, you know, with these individual families, you know, the town probably had maybe a population of like a couple thousand people at most. But often I would be hanging out with my homestay sisters, just cruising about in the summertime in the sun. And a lot of people would be like, whose daughter is that? We've never seen her around. Like, who, like, is she your cousin? Like, she's from here clearly, but like it's just, it wasn't until I started speaking Spanish in these places that people realized that I'm not from there, because my Spanish is very, very Mexican sounding. And it makes sense, because I grew up with a lot of Mexican, you know, Mexican communities here in Portland. That's, you know, I learned Spanish from Mexican people, and that's who I was immersed with. So naturally, I'll pick up on that accent. But it just, now my Spanish, I feel like, is kind of like this big blob of different words that don't always fit in with the right people that I'm talking with. So, like, you know, I learned, hey, certain words I can't use with certain people if they're from this place, because it means something totally different. Like, I did not know the dangers of talking about eating cake with different people from different places. Oh my gosh. Or talking
the word
about bugs.
Straw alone, bugs. Especially in Puerto Rico.
Oh my gosh. I made, so here's the thing.
Everything
so
is sexual in Latin America.
Right. It was just, anyway, so I was in college, and I did continue to study Spanish. That was my second major in college. But I had a professor from Bolivia, and she made an example of like something, and she said, I can't sleep in my bed because there's bed bugs. And she said, she used the word for insect that you shouldn't use in Puerto Rico.
Well, it's a dictionary word.
I mean, you can use it, but there's a slang meaning. And so it's like,
bichito or bicho.
Yeah, I lost my mind in that class. I had to step aside because I couldn't stop laughing.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. But yeah, basically, I love languages. I love words. I love just hearing people's stories, essentially. And that's those words, regardless of language, that's what gives us the ability to share and you know, talk story. So,
and yes, we are just probably 15 minutes left to the show or less, but we have to find time to shoehorn spam into this.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Okay.
So we're here. So we're a bunch of, you know, really cute brown femmes around the table, and we're all from islands of some sort. Mm-hmm. But what connects us about those islands? Poochie?
We are connected by spam. Even all the way from the Caribbean, we are all connected by spam. Puerto Rico, the Philippines, Palau, because spam is the colonial legacy of the United States. If the United States has invaded or attempted to take military control and they came in boats, you have spam. Why? We have this in Puerto Rico. We have this in the Philippines. We have this in Palau, in Hawaii, in where else?
Guam.
Guam, yes, yeah, Guam. Even Korea.
Yeah, spam is everywhere.
And we love it. And who brought it with them? The U.S. military. Because it was their canned food, because it travels easily. And so, I mean, honestly, it's not as big in Puerto Rico as it is in the Pacific.
Yeah.
Like, in Puerto Rico, but everybody eats it in Puerto Rico, and we love it, but it's not like you're not gonna find it in McDonald's.
Okay, so tell me how, like, I feel like I've had people still be here in Portland a bit snobbish about when they see like spam musubi.
Okay, I saw
that thing was revolutionary.
I saw artisanal spam at musubi, and I don't know how I feel about spam. This. I really don't, because
what is artisanal spam?
I mean, I don't even know what regular spam is. So how do you make it artisanal?
So the musubi owner and chef Hey, Daryl, made his attempt, and it's great to make homemade. So not the branded Spam, but to make his own version of Spam that he makes himself.
I feel like
in-house.
He must be some kind of like chemist or something, because I don't even know what Spam is to be able to make it myself at home.
Yo, and reverse engineering?
Yeah. Trust me, we do not want to know
sure
what's in Spam.
I'm not sure I want to know. I kind of like that mystique of Spam, you know?
The mystery?
Yeah.
Mm.
I mean,
It's there.
I just know it's Spam and it's delicious, and that's enough for me. I'm a very simple, simple woman.
Well, I mean, I know it's processed meat and it's pork. So I wouldn't be afraid if somebody told me like it's whatever parts of the inside of pork, because at least I don't know if like in the Pacific it's the same, but in Puerto Rico, like when you eat the pork, you eat
everything.
The entire pork.
I mean, I'm such a huge fan of like if a taco truck doesn't have tripas, I get disappointed. I get really sad because it's like it's still delicious. I'll still eat it, but yeah. This is making me one low-key hungry, but two, it makes me wonder. It just gave me the idea of like, what if we had like, you know,
some chicharrón.
That too, like a island Spam pop-up dinner thing where it's like, this is Spam from Puerto Rico, this is Spam from the Philippines, this is Spam in Palau, this is how we eat it. Maybe I'm just getting ahead of myself and because I'm hungry, but I think it would be cool. I think it would be cool. Trademark, that's copyrighted. Don't steal my idea, just saying.
So for Lillian, this is really great for us to be able to talk about an event that you're going to be a part of in September.
Yeah, so I will be part of the Tender Table fundraiser in September. I believe it's September 5th.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for verifying.
At Holocene.
Yeah, at Holocene. I know exactly what I'm making for this.
What?
I know.
Is it a surprise?
Something with Spam?
No. I mean, it's not. No, unfortunately. No, it's actually not a surprise because I just talked about it. I'm going to be making, not Spam musubi. No, I'm going to be making little coconut candies, Palauan style, and sharing that with everybody. And for those of you who missed out on my first Tender Table appearance, you know, this is just another chance for you to come see me talk about my family and talk about my food, because I love both of those things.
Can you say a little bit more about what the Tender Table series is about?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was part of the very first one.
I missed it.
It's okay. Oh yeah, we're getting every
food and Ecuadorian food
representation, absolutely. But like, why don't you explain it?
So for those of you who don't know, Tender Table is a storytelling platform for women of color and gender non-conforming people of color to be able to talk about food that's relevant to their culture and relevant to you know, how they find how they find comfort in their food, or sometimes not. But then they get to share the food that they're talking about, or share other food that's connected to the story. And really, it's kind of two things that I absolutely love, because I already mentioned I love stories and people. But I just sang a little tiny jingle about food. So come on, it's really amazing. You should all really check it out. And this fundraiser, the money is actually going to be raised to be able to pay the actual performers during the 2018 series of Tender Table, which we are so excited to have. Like, we're so excited that Tender Table's really taken off, and I think it's going to be really wonderful to bring in just a really, really vast and broad and diverse range of people and stories to the next iteration of this series. So yeah, super excited for that.
And I want to point out kind of the importance of it in saying that people are centering their culture, centering their food, and being the ones to be able to talk about and set the narrative for their own food, instead of allowing other people, or, you know, maybe through the white gaze in food media, decide that a whole culture is a trend, let's say.
Yikes. All kinds of yikes. And that actually just happened. I personally experienced that. A couple weeks ago, somebody asked me to help them out with Palauan cuisine for their pop-up dinner. That was fundraiser. Yeah. And it was really bizarre, because they kind of white mansplained things to me, even though I'm from the this place and this culture, so I know exactly what these things are. And oh, it was just such a bizarre, very strange thing to look at and see and realize that they didn't invite me to the table. They didn't reach out to any other Palauan people in the community. They didn't know that there's been a Palauan food essentially potluck in Portland for the last 30 years. They didn't know that there was a Taste of Micronesia festival run out of Salem for multiple years. It's almost as if they didn't do any kind of research on this community. So
that's already here.
Yeah, that's been here and that's been present.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
The presidency? Are you talking about the 30-year one?
Oh, yeah, yeah, the President's Day. Yeah, the Palauan community has been in Portland for well over 30 years. And yeah, it was just really surprising.
I missed the Palauan President's Day potluck.
You got to mark your calendar next year because we're going to have at least two pigs next time.
Oh, my God,
it's
yes.
just standard. So, yeah, mark your calendars. It's the first Saturday of June.
And a lot of what I like about the way, even how we just very, very, casually improvised a conversation about food today is just that there's a difference when it comes from the people speaking of it.
Oh, you know? Absolutely. And I don't, what really hit me about somebody trying to essentially, colonize and gentrify my food is that for me, food is very important. Food is very much a community building thing for Palauan people and for many Pacific Islanders. You can't separate the food from the people, and the fact that they were trying to separate the food from the people is what really got to me. They tried to ask me for a recipe for something that takes over 2 days to prepare, and they said, "Oh, and I'm going to go grab the ingredients this afternoon." And mm-hmm. I'm like, "You're not going to have a dinner tonight, at least not a Palauan dinner." So, yeah, interesting to see this happening.
If there could be any, I want to call it, like, dream food, food that, like, you could just, like, have and that speaks to you. Let's get it from, we'll get a taste of like Tender Tableness right now. Of,
I have to choose just one food.
Just one right now. We got 1 minute.
Gosh. Can I just eat everything twice?
Well, I have had the fried donuts.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's a big one. So
it's fried food.
Yeah, no.
I know. I'm just trying to get that.
I think every culture has a fried bread, fried doughy, delicious carby thing, and I'm so here for it.
Well,
so
Puerto Rico, it's everything because that's all we eat, fried food.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Totally. Just yes to all of that. So yeah, I believe my specialty would be Palauan donuts, otherwise known as tama, which is hilarious because tama in Samoan means boy. So if you're eating tama in Palauan, you're eating donut. But if you're eating tama in Samoan, you probably just shouldn't say that around old people or the
Yeah. See, this is how I know that Lillian knows how to her way around the mic right now, because that is the perfect way we are going to end tonight's show. You've been listening to Bread and Roses on KBO Portland 90.7 FM. Thank you so much for listening. Many thanks to our engineer, Jenna Yokoyama.
Thank you.
And next week, we're going to be featuring a conversation. I'd like to highlight it more as a conversation and less as an interview between Trans Am author Joseph McClellan and our former collective member, Nia Nguyen. And that is going to be a really special conversation, talking about transamory, talking about transgender identity, especially in this time right now. There's always going to be a lot of news and focus on the violence against trans women, especially Black women. So that is for next week, y'all. We are on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses. You can access podcasts and also check us out on Facebook as well as Twitter. And on our way out, I just wanted to say we have music specifically coming from this Canadian electronic group, Filipino-Canadian, Datu. And it's great that we get to go out on tonight's show because for today, Bandcamp is donating 100% of its profits to the Transgender Law Center, a nonprofit organization that works tirelessly to change law, policy, and culture for the equitable. So you can actually find that information and Datu's album on Bandcamp, datuclan.bandcamp.com/releases. And we're going to be playing World Gong Crazy. And have a good night.
Good night.
Night.
Listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7 o'clock. A quick correction there. The song that you're listening to by Datu right now is a track called All In, which can be found on the Bandcamp, according to Pamela. So coming up next is Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. You are listening to KBOO Portland.